You're listening to The World's Talking with Dave O'Grady. Don't forget, if you have a story, an internet forum, a discussion you want to have, email theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Don't forget to click like on Facebook, like on Twitter, like on everything, and we'll chat to you then. Yes, you're very welcome along to Talking Rugby with Dave O'Grady. This is podcast 10 of our series. Remember, you can find us on iTunes by typing in Talking Rugby into the search bar, and you'll find us and you can subscribe to the show. It's a very special show. I'm delighted to be joined once again by Alan in Limerick. How are you, Alan?
Very good.
Now, Alan, a quick one. Peter was telling me, or our research team was telling me, that you were very down about Westlife's split up. What do you make of that? No comment.
Yeah, it's a dark day for our country.
Indeed. You said the same when Ireland were knocked out of the World Cup. And Peter joining us in Toronto, Canada. Peter, I believe you're a bit of a marathon man.
Yeah, that's me, all right. Yeah, marathon, all right. At everything I do.
Can you believe this guy running from the loan sharks? No doubt.
Yeah, they were following me every step of the way.
And who are you running in the marathon with?
I think there was a couple of thousand people running in it.
You're saying something. You were in with another Irishman, I do believe.
Yeah. I was in with another Irishman. Jamie. He was dressed as an Irish clown.
He wasn't a banker, was he?
He was. He is.
Oh dear. This just gets better and better. They're going over to Canada next. I'm delighted to be joined by another Peter. He's a tip man in Cork, but we're gonna call him Pedro. Hola, Pedro. ¿Cómo estás?
Muy bien.
Oh, very. Look at that, Pedro, whipping out the words. Pedro,
no cerveza, por favor. That's it.
Oh, that's a beautiful accent, I have to say. Pedro, you're very welcome to the program. Lads, we're going to start it. Let's get down to business before we get carried away. We've seen the New Zealand-Australia game. Peter, I guess we were expecting a much closely fought encounter. A lot of people were saying Australia might have done this, but I guess New Zealand were simply awesome, particularly in the first half.
Definitely. I thought that Australia would give it a good go, and I thought it would be much closer than it actually turned out in the end. But in New Zealand in the first half, they were unbelievably good. Every facet of their play was fantastic. I mean, they were just hitting the rucks with so much intensity. The lines that they were running were amazing, and Australia simply couldn't live with them. And I think it was the case. Australia never actually really kicked off in this tournament, especially after losing to Ireland. Then they never pretty much got into top gear at all. Their defence was good against South Africa, but it was a case of they just didn't kick it into gear at all, and New Zealand pretty much steamrolled them.
Yeah, would you probably go along with that one, Pedro?
Yeah, I would to a certain extent, right. It's a pity because I think Australia peaked in the Tri Nations, and then when it came to the World Cup, they were fairly flat the first game, and then they were really knocked off their kind of pedestal by Ireland. Like, I agree with a lot of what you guys said already. I thought New Zealand were very good in patches against Australia. But by the time Australia got to New Zealand, you know, after the physical hammering they took off South Africa, which I watched that for the fourth time, and I still don't know how Australia won that game. But you could see that the Australians, they were shagged after about 50 minutes. Like even when they were two scores down, like, Cooper was kicking the ball away, like, and Australia, you know, they'll always run for tries. And even at that stage, you're thinking, God, they've actually just given up, like. One thing I would say, though, is that I don't think New Zealand are really burying teams like they used to. Like, even against Argentina, you know, they're hanging on to the last 30 minutes. They got a few late scores. Against Australia, they weren't playing Australia. They were essentially playing, like, England or something like that. They should have hammered Australia. That could come back and get the haunt them against France. If France were a better team, I'd be worried, but
It'll be interesting to see. How about that, Alan? Australia were shagged.
They really gave everything against South Africa, and the box were as Pedro says, you know, it was criminal that the box didn't win that game. And really, Australia, it did look like they had nothing in the tank. What I felt was that the game really felt like New Zealand's World Cup final, because this was the game that New Zealand could lose. I don't think they believe that the result is in doubt this weekend. But Australia always had the capacity to beat them. But really, the game was essentially over after Nanu's try, because New Zealand were always going to win after that, after a start like that. And I'm very, very disappointed, because Australia have been the big letdown of the tournament, because with the backs they have on paper, you know, I really fancied them to light up the tournament with some great tries, but it just didn't happen for them at all. And I suppose for the All Blacks, I suppose Pedro's right that they didn't put them away, but I suppose it is all positive. The biggest worry was Richie McCaw's fitness, but he played very well, so I think it's all looking good for them going into this final. And you know, they'll really fancy themselves to bury France at the weekend.
Yeah, Peter, I guess that semi-final really was like, it did feel like New Zealand's World Cup final. What did you make of the performance of Quade Cooper?
I know Quade Cooper's coming in for an awful lot of criticism, especially down under. Everybody had great expectations of Cooper, especially about how he performed with the Reds. And I think everyone expected him to come in and deliver these masterful performances. But the problem with Cooper is you get to supply him with the complete madness, and it just seems this tournament didn't really go for him. But his performance, while he started poorly and his kicking out of hand was absolutely terrible, he actually tried and he had a good game, I felt. He was one of the few Australian players who actually came out of the game looking good.
Yeah, Pedro, was there signs of Cooper actually returning to form in the last 30 minutes of the game? A lot of people seem to be saying that.
Yeah, I'd agree with what Peter said there, actually. Like, remember when he kicked that drop goal, you could see that like his confidence was coming back a little bit there, and like he's the ultimate confidence player. Like, I admire Deans a lot for the way he handled the Australian team, and there's a lot of egos in there. Like, but like, I think he essentially, he really narrowed his options when he only picked Cooper as their only 10. You know, he dropped Ghetto. Now, I can understand why, because Ghetto is trouble. Like, you know, he's led player revolts before at every club he's been with, you know, and there is an issue with him and Deans. But, like, Deans essentially has boxed himself into, I can only play Cooper, like, because Barrick Barnes isn't a proper international 10. So he was expecting Cooper to play this tactical game, like, you know, kicking out of hand, which is, that's just not on. That's not his game at all, like. Another thing I thought that killed Australia was they didn't produce any front football of note against any of the decent teams, like, and the best of Cooper is when he's running onto the ball, not when he's running backwards, so.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Alan, would you go along with that? I mean, I guess it is a pity for the guy, it was his chance to shine and all.
Yeah, he's showed a lot of talent in the last two seasons, and this was his big chance to step up and shine, but he's as inconsistent as Irish weather. I mean, it's ridiculous, really. As the lad said, like, he is a confidence player, and this whole experience would be a big downer for him. And like his character and his temperament, you know, his off field behavior, it's a big question mark surrounding Cooper. I mean, if you compare him to Dan Carter, who is just a consummate professional, you know, cool, calm, collected, and does all his talking on the pitch. And for Cooper now, I think he'll make a recovery when he gets back playing with the Reds in January or February, because he's always played well at Super Rugby level, and maybe hasn't translated to Test level completely. I'm hoping that he will be a positive influence in about 10 hours time against Wales, because you know, he is a talented player, and you don't want to see talented players not fulfilling their potential.
Yeah, I want to just pick you up on a point there, and bring it to Pedro. Pedro, Alan said the guy, you know, he mentioned he's as inconsistent as Irish weather, you know, in all seasons, I suppose.
But with Cooper, you actually get a summer, as opposed to Ireland. Is it going to be winter tomorrow, or is it going to be freezing winter next week, like? Yeah, I completely agree, like, but I thought the mix was wrong in midfield there. I would have played Barrick Barnes at 12 because, you know, he brings that controlling influence and he's got experience. Like Pat McCabe, God love him now, he was basically a traffic baller that people ran into constantly until his head exploded. Like, he went off in every single game injured. Now, the guy tackled his heart out, but he contributes nothing, like. So for me, I would have put something like Barnes or Ghetto. I know Ghetto wasn't in the squad, like, but you're asking too much of Cooper. Like, look, you know what he does well, and you know what he does terribly. So don't ask him to do the terrible things well.
Yeah, I've never seen now. I do a traffic show myself, but it would be interesting to see him working on the streets, the busy streets of Dublin, cleaning up the traffic. Peter, do you want to make a final point on Cooper?
Yeah, Cooper, I think one thing we just can't forget is regards to the unbelievable hardship that Cooper was getting from the home crowd, from the New Zealand fans. You know, that really would have played hard on his game. So I think we also have to take that into account, and the fact that he actually in that game, that he played himself into the game, I think that's a big credit to him, and I honestly think it'll stand to him, and I don't think it's the last we've seen of Cooper.
Okay, before we go onto the France and Wales game, I just want to hit Alan with a point about Cooper. And Peter was just mentioning about the crowd and that was a pretty good point. But Alan, you spoke a little bit about the off-field antics and that kind of thing. Can you imagine if he was in the English team and one for the tabloids, I suppose? How do you think he'd fare in the English team? Do you think it would be just out of control?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I suppose it would suit him almost. he could have the crack with all his English mates.
It almost feels as if he'd be actually ringing up the media to tell them what he's going to do next. That kind of thing, if he was involved there.
I mean, England were a big enough comedy show. I mean, throw Cooper in and you've got a sitcom, you know?
Yeah, JD, I might pay a couple of quid to go see that. Okay, lads, let's get real. The France v Wales clash. I mean, there's obviously a huge talking point regarding the sending off, but Peter, if I can come to you first, was it a case of the best team lost? I mean, I felt a bit sorry for Wales. I know you're not a big fan of the Welsh, but let's put that aside and put on your fairness hat here. What do you think?
I'm always fair when it comes to Wales, just because I said I didn't want to go on holiday there. You wouldn't blame me for that.
You don't like the Welsh, and everybody, even Ivor the Engine, the old children's TV show from Wales, knows that. So was it a case that the best team lost?
Definitely, Wales really were. They were the better team by a mile. Even when they had 14 men on the pitch for such a long duration, they should have won that game. But I know they're trying to blame the ref. They're blaming everybody else for their own downfall. But at the end of the day, they contributed massively to their own downfall. I mean, both Hook and Jones missed some penalties that clearly 9 times out of 10 they would get, but they just pretty much bottled it on the day. And also, the intensity that they play with, Warburton he was right to get to, well, we'll discuss it later, but, you know, that was, for a captain to commit such a ridiculous challenge, that pretty much is a massive contributing factor to the end result. But to think that France were actually in a World Cup final after that game, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, how about that, Alan? Wales are bottlers.
Yeah, It's unfair to say that the red card decision was the biggest contributing factor to their loss. I mean, yeah, they did contribute to their own downfall, and I think the key was they really missed Priestland at 10, and the way he can control the game for them like he did against Ireland. I think Hook was a disaster, and particularly in defence. He let Morgan Parra walk through the midfield 3 or 4 times, and Parra isn't the quickest. So Priestland was a big, big loss to them. And again, as Peter said, they had the chances to win and they just didn't take them. And at this level, at this sort of stage, if you don't take your chances, you're going to pay for it. And it's unfortunate because Wales, they are a good side, and they did play a good brand of rugby. And you know, they packed 60,000 people into the Millennium Stadium to watch the game back in Cardiff, which is amazing. It reminds me of the streets of Limerick when Munster were playing in the Heineken Cup finals.
Yeah,
it's a shame, and I just hope, we'll mention it later, but I hope France, they did play badly, but I hope they improve and justify their place in the final at the weekend.
Yeah, say Pedro, do you think we're blowing this whole Welsh thing out of proportion? I mean, these things can happen in the World Cup at the same time.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, you got to factor in the unexpected in every event. Like we said, there's never not a surprise in the World Cup. But, like, to be honest with you, I thought the better team lost, but I think people are getting way too carried away with Wales. Like, now, fairness to Gatland, now he's put in the building blocks for a serious team down the line. Like, but look, what exactly did they do in this World Cup? You know, they couldn't put South Africa away when they had them on the ropes. South Africa were shagged. They beat Samoa just about. Samoa had a 3-day turnaround. They played Namibia 3 days after Namibia shipped nearly 100 points to South Africa, and they played Fiji's third team. Fair enough, they beat Ireland. That's it. And they couldn't put away France, like, who were absolutely knackered after 60 minutes. I don't know what kind of coaching France are doing, like, but if they're out on their feet against 14 men after 16 minutes, or 60 minutes, you'd fear what New Zealand would do to them.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, France, Livermont is maybe a bit of a Paul Daniels in this World Cup. Lads, if I was to move on, let's talk about the red card. I mean, Sam Warburton, Alan Rowland, was it a red card? It's a very big issue and a lot of people are talking about it. Just a quick quote, in the 2009 directive to referees, the IRB stated that if the player is lifted and then forced to the ground or speared into the ground, a red card should be issued for this type of tackle. And also the directive stated that if the lifted player is dropped to the ground from a height with no regard to the player's safety, you know, surely then Roland made the right decision. But, you know, you could say that, Peter, but from my view and from looking at the actual tackle, it seemed like he was in two minds. He let go when he knew, oh, this could be bad. And instead of ploughing him into the ground like as proper kind of spear tackles do, he realized halfway through the action that this was a bad thing. I mean, it's a fine line, isn't it?
It's not, well, I suppose it is a fine line, but in this situation, I don't think it was a fine line at all. I mean, he dropped him. Even if it was a case of he thought, oh, well, I'm not going to spear him, I shall just drop him. Well, why couldn't he just, it was his responsibility to actually, to make sure the safe landing of the tackle player, and he just dropped him. You know, it was reckless, and it was unbelievably a stupid challenge, and I think Roland is justified by the fact that the IRB have now given a further ban, you know, to Warburton.
Yeah, Alan, what do you think about it? Do you think that, would you go along with that? Roland made the right decision, or is it a case that, you know, he could have maybe just sent him to the sin bin?
Well, no, the arguments that have been bandied about the place, you know, that Roland, because of the semi-final, he should have let the game flow and took it easy on Warburton, it's just nonsense. It's a stonewall red card. The referee has to follow the directives he's been given by the IRB, and that's it. You know, he's not there to ensure an entertaining spectacle or a fair contest between two sides of 15 players. He's there to ensure player safety, and that's his number one priority. Absolute stonewall red card. And Clark, he did a bit of play acting, but he could have, at the same time, he could have been seriously hurt if you look at the way he landed on his head, on his neck. And, you know, Warburton, he could have made an effort. If you watch it, not even in slow motion, in real time speed, that he could have made an effort to drive him back in the tackle. And then that would have meant that he would have let him down safely, so Clark wouldn't have fallen from a height. So Warburton is the villain here. It isn't Roland at all.
Yeah, would you agree with that, Pedro, that that Warburton is the villain and not Roland?
I don't know about Warburton being the villain, because, you know, look, at the end of the day, he's what, 22, he's in a semi, he's going to be pumped up. I don't think it's Roland's fault. I think he's 100% correct, and we saw in the Hiding Cup this season when he sent Marty off for Toulouse for a straight red, same thing again. I think that the problem is with the other refs who aren't applying the same rules. Like, ITV were really taking the mick there at halftime when they showed like three or four examples of the World Cup where, you know, there was a yellow card or no penalty at all, and this is somehow supposed to justify Roland making a mistake. No, those refs should have red carded all those four players. And that's why Roland is getting a semi-final, and that's why those chumps are reffing the likes of Romania, etc.
Yeah, do you think that's a case, Pedro, with the referees? Do you think that they try to kind of give the, rather than stepping up to the plate in what is a crucial match, they're kind of looking for the easy way out almost?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, it's kind of a, look, I'll just give him a yellow and let the citing commissioner sort it out. Like, but like, a player is never, like, players are never going to learn if they're thinking, right, my only punishment is a yellow, I'll take my chances in court afterwards. Like,
Roland
even got criticised for making a snap decision. Come on, like, what's he going to do? He saw it, he called it, he applied the rules as they're written down. look, it's tough. I sympathise with Wales. At the time, I was screaming at the television, literally screaming at Roland. Like, but in hindsight, he was spot on.
Yeah, and a final point on that, Alan. Do you think that, you know, looking at the reaction of Warburton, it was okay? He, you know, he took it in his stride and he kind of walked off the pitch fine. He accepted it.
Yeah, just when I said villain there, I suppose I didn't mean that he actually meant intent or that he wanted to injure Clark. I think it was more reckless than actually going out to hurt the player. But in fairness to him, he didn't complain. He took his punishment quickly and he got off the pitch straight away. And even though other Welsh players didn't react, which was very good. But at the same time, he is captain. He does have responsibility. He is still a young player. I don't think he is a dirty player. I think he has a good disciplinary record. I've never heard of him getting any serious ban. So I suppose he'll learn from it. And it is a shame because he's had an absolutely brilliant World Cup. And I think Lions captain probably, and definitely a star for Wales.
Yeah.
The next few years.
Yeah, cracking player altogether. Peter, what about this refereeing business in rugby? Do you think the refs have a very difficult job? You see in soccer and that, you know, one bad game, you know, you give a fella two yellow cards when he's supposed to be on a red card and he's gone, the referee's gone. As simple mistakes in soccer, I suppose, and your career may never recover. Do you think rugby referees have it hard?
Rugby referees have it very hard. I mean, there was always a gentlemanly respect shown by supporters and players towards the ref, and the players still do, as shown by the way Warburton went off, you know, took his punishment. But I suppose with the popularity now of rugby and everybody following it, you're going to get that from the fans that, like soccer, every decision that goes against them, they're going to criticise it. And with rugby, because there's so many laws and there's so many different interpretations, and every couple of years they change the interpretations, and it is a case of when is a penalty, because next year it may not actually be a penalty. So the refs, it's a very tough life for a ref, because that's the biggest complaint by any rugby fan, is the consistency. What one ref deems a penalty may not be a penalty with another ref. So for me, it's pretty much a case of the IRB, what they need to do is to spend less time focusing on changing the interpretations and more time on actually getting the refs a joined up thinking and approach on actually making the calls and having a standardized approach. Because rugby is actually week in, week out, you're seeing decisions that different refs are having different interpretations, and it is impacting the game.
Yeah, Alan, would you share Peter's view, you know, and sympathise with the referees in this case?
Yeah, I think rugby, it's becoming a bit like soccer in that the referee performances are being scapegoated for teams losing matches. And as Peter says, the different interpretations of the laws, they're causing chaos, and it's frustrating for the coaches, the players, and for the refs themselves, because they're all being painted with the same brush, but it's not necessarily true for all of them. You know, these World Cup refs, they're all professionals and they all train very hard, and I think that they deserve more credit than what they get for what they do, because it is a thankless job. You know, the ref's role is just to, you know, call it as he sees it, and again, as I mentioned before about player safety, there are some refs that we've seen before that like the sound of their voice too much, particularly domestically in the Pro 12. I won't mention any names now, but
yeah,
I think, you know, it is a very tough job, and fair play to them for doing it. Someone's got to do it, and it's difficult, because, you know, you're always going to be in the firing line if you do something wrong, and there's huge pressure. If you look at Craig Joubert this weekend, I mean, what are the odds that he's going to sin-bin Richie McCaw? You know, it just won't happen.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so the pressure on the refs is huge, and I suppose the discussion on Richie McCaw is for another day. But just, you know, you got to give them a chance.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, well, there's some scallywag going bringing in the Pro 12 into this. But Peter, just a point on the referees. I mean, I've seen there's abuse of the referees by fans on social networks. I think there's a few Facebook pages set up. That's ridiculous, and that's really unheard of in rugby up to now.
It's unheard of in rugby. You see it quite a bit in soccer, all right. But yeah, I saw there where there's a Facebook page. Versus Alan Rowland, and there was over, I don't know how many thousand people had signed up to it, but it's completely ridiculous. I mean, people with just too much time on their hands, there's more to worry about than the ref made the right call. So, like, surely people should be venting their fury at, you know, their coaches and their players, you know, for playing such an aggressive game that, you know, and putting the ref in that position. So, yeah, it's just idiots, if you ask me.
Yeah, they should get together and make a rugby discussion show. It might work a little bit better for them.
Blame Fianna Fáil.
Yeah. Okay, lads. I guess the final match I want to talk about is the final game, you know, New Zealand against France. Peter, it's a bit of a bizarre one because France, of course, defeated New Zealand in the 2007 World Cup. New Zealand, I think, demolished France in the group stages of this World Cup. New Zealand are at home. The pressure's on all of them. Will Levermont pull a few ace of hearts out of his sleeve, or what do you think's going to happen?
I don't think Levermont can pull anything out of his sleeve.
he's probably not into cards anyway. You could probably beat him at a game of snap. But what do you think?
God knows what, but yeah, this before the tournament even kicked off, this was the final I was expecting. It was New Zealand and France, but purely on the grounds that I actually thought France would show up and actually play rugby. But they have actually been very poor this tournament, and it's very hard to talk them up. I mean, they had a good 30 minutes against England, but as we all know, England were no great shakes. So on paper, what we have here in this game probably are the two best sides.
Yeah.
But New Zealand consistently are the world's best team. France are very inconsistent, and under date would be a match for New Zealand. Now, the big thing is, are France going to turn up in this game? It's very hard to see. I think it's going to be a case of if New Zealand don't attack from the start and they don't get a good headwind behind them, then maybe France will get some confidence and could play themselves into the game. But it's very hard to see past an All Black victory here. France just seemed in disarray. I mean, Rougerie stormed out of a press conference there during the week, and I think Levermont started criticising the players even after their Wales win, saying that they were big children for going out and having a beer. I mean, It's so hard to actually to do a preview on this game, because it's hard enough to always to know what France are going to turn up, but considering everything that's going on in the background, I just don't know. We could actually see the best France team ever turning up and beat New Zealand. It's hard to know.
Yeah, what do you think of that, Pedro? And, you know, with your Spanish connections, you obviously might know a bit. You're close enough to France there. Do you think that it will be a case of New Zealand steamrolling them and the French just falling apart? Or do you think this unbelievable, bizarre French team morale and relationship with the manager, do you think all that will just come together and they'll actually overcome the All Blacks in the final? Who'd have thought they'd be in a final the way this tournament was shaping up?
But that's just French people in general, isn't it? They're just like, the normal rules don't apply to them. Like, their country is running chaos. Everything is chaos. Like, Alan can sympathize here, having lived in France. You know how things work over there. You've seen the public system, how it works. If they don't like something, they start burning sheep in the streets. Like, this is France to a T. You think, from the outside in, you're going, you put them in English jerseys and Irish jerseys, you go, oh my God, they're going to lose by 100 points. Like, but the normal things just don't apply here. I think it'll be closer than people think. I think, said and done, New Zealand will just want to win it at the end of the day, at all costs. They'll just want to win it. I wouldn't even be surprised if they started playing conservative rugby at some stage. But personally, I really want to see the All Blacks win it, not because of any great affinity to them. I just don't like France at the moment. And I don't like them because they're capable of so much more. Like, you know, that old cliche, like, they are the racehorse pulling the plough. You know, like, England and South Africa play a certain boring percentage rugby, but they're limited by the donkeys they have in centre, like. France are capable of so much more, but they're just concentrating on this line out and kicking game, and it's so basic. But hey, look, this could be the ultimate rope-a-dope. Like, this could be Liebermann's, like, suckering him up and just waiting for the knockout punch. I can't see it happening. I hope New Zealand win it, but I think it'll be tight.
Yeah, Alan, would you go along with that? You know, do you share that view with Pedro that he just doesn't like France?
Well, I love France. Having lived there, I absolutely love my time over there. And
well, you'd expect it from Pedro with his Spanish connections, but yeah, I mean, the rugby team, Alan.
Yeah, I know. They're entertainment value, aren't they? Just this whole tournament, they've been just up and down. They've been a pretty good soap opera to follow, haven't they?
Yeah.
But look, I suppose the final, it's the same as 1987, the same teams at the same ground, and yeah, it's amazing France have got this far. I mean, who would have thought after the Tonga match? It's more remarkable than England's recovery in 2007, which was remarkable in itself. I think there has been a big change in the background of with the French team. During the semi-final at halftime, there was pictures showing the French dressing room, and Liebermann was a peripheral figure. He wasn't saying anything, and it was all the big players, the Arnautiki, the Ashvillis, that were all talking. So
yeah,
there's definitely been a player revolt in the squad. I suppose the big battle for me in this game is at 10. I think you would have got absolutely huge odds at the bookies if you would have predicted that Aaron Cruden and Morgan Parra would have been the starting tens in a World Cup final. It's incredible. I suppose Parra is more experienced than Cruden at test level, but he is still an experienced number 10. But he did actually play quite well against Wales, although I still would have put in Tranduc just for his kicking.
Yeah.
I suppose with Cruden, he had a decent game against Australia. And to be honest, I don't think he has to play very well for the All Blacks to win this, because he's got such class inside him with Weepu and outside him with Nonu and Smith and Corey Jane that really all he needs to do is keep the errors down and just be a link man, and his teammates around him will work their magic.
Mm, it'll be interesting. I'll be bringing Pedro in just two ticks, but I want to put a point to Peter to get his view, his Canadian view. Obviously, you know, we've got a bit of a French connection there. Peter, does the average punter run on the street rugby fan who likes to watch teams play rugby, do they want New Zealand to win this game?
I think people will be divided. I mean, it's a good question, but I think like any final, you are going to be divided. Some people love France and what they stand for and how they play the game.
Because it just reminded me of, I think, the Euro 2004 when Portugal were playing against a very defensive Greece side, and everybody was looking for the free-flowing soccer Portuguese side to overcome. Portuguese were at home, obviously, and then Greece shut up shop and nicked a goal at the end and won the game. You know, people, I guess, were up for Portugal because they wanted to stop this awful style of football going through. Do you think the same kind of thing can be applied to France, like people's attitudes?
It's not a case. Well, I suppose it's not really a case of France are playing horrible rugby. They're just not actually playing well at all. But when you look at their players, 1 to 15, they can actually go out there and play well. And the thing is, there's no point in going up against New Zealand and thinking that you can't play rugby. You can beat them by giving them the ball, kicking the ball down the field. New Zealand will tear them apart. So if France turn up and if France win this, even for the neutral fans, they're going to see a classic game, because France are not going to be able to simply choke New Zealand out of the game and win ugly. This is going to be a classic. If France turn up and win, it'll be a classic.
Yep. Would you go along with that, Pedro? It's going to be an El Clasico.
I can't see it personally. I think it's going to be one team either way. I'm not completely discounting out the French because, you know, they are capable of anything, but just to touch back on Alan's point there, you talk about the dressing room at half time, you know, that Liebermann was a peripheral figure. When England won that 2000, I told him, look, your job is done, like, we're here, we're the players, we know what we're going to do. France might adopt a similar siege mentality. You just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's going to be, that's the great thing about a Rugby World Cup. You don't know who'd have thought England would even win a World Cup in the year that they did. Alan, I guess really the final point to you, you've described France as a comedy show. You know, it's a wee bit of a sitcom at times. I mean, is this show going to be worth watching?
Oh, we'll be watching because France, they have to perform on this big stage because if they don't, they're going to lose by 50 points because the All Blacks will be desperate to put up points early to kill France off. The nightmares will still be there about 2007 and 99 and every other year they've choked. So I think if France, if they play like they played against Wales, the game will be over at halftime. If France are still in the hunt at halftime, they'll always have a chance, you know. And if France, they're a bit like Quay Cooper, when they're confident, they're absolutely brilliant and they are capable of beating any team. I think for France, the leaders in the team, like Dusatoir, Mass, Aaron Ardicky, they're going to step up to the plate. And I believe they'll bring the others along with them. And we'll see what happens, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to ask each of you guys for a prediction, starting with Peter in Canada. Peter, I'd say I'm guessing you're going New Zealand.
Yeah, I just can't see past New Zealand. It's France haven't shown any signs, so I would go with New Zealand by a +10 margin.
+10, okay, Pedro. Oh well, you want to listen to Peter? Peter's the betting man. Pedro, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd go along with that. Something similar as well. Yeah.
Yeah, and Alan, you're going for New Zealand again.
New Zealand by. I think they're gonna put up a decent score here. I think it'll be New Zealand by 15 to 20 points.
Wow, that's incredible, lads! What do you think about the standard of the Rugby World Cup? Peter, I suppose, are you happy you sat in and watched it? You got up. You're in Canada, of course. So I think it was early mornings for you, was it, or late evenings? Or actually, did you have a nice handy time to watch it?
And no, the games were usually either at 1 or 4, but it just meant plenty of drinking so beforehand.
Yeah.
So, the
World, you believe the World Cup, this guy, real piece of work. Sorry, go ahead, Peter.
I suppose, yeah, for me it was when it comes to World Cups, you build yourself up so much that you do always get that empty feeling at the end. There was highs, there was lows, but ultimately, I suppose it could actually climax in a massive game at the weekend and turn out to be a great World Cup because we haven't seen good World Cup finals for the last two ones. But yeah, it was pretty much like the rest of them. It all hinges whether it's a really good one. It all hinges on the weekend's game.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And Alan, final point to you. What do you think? Have you been happy with the World Cup? The standard, I guess, the Northern Hemisphere teams, did they impress?
I don't think the quality has been that great, to be honest. But I suppose there have been some exciting moments. The games between England, Scotland, Argentina, I mean, they were all pretty poor in terms of quality, but they were captivating to watch. They were all decided in the last 10 minutes. Yeah, I think a lot of the teams that were expected to, like as I mentioned before about Australia, a lot of the teams were expected to do something in this World Cup, like Australia, Samoa,
yeah,
France as well. They haven't really produced, and that's the disappointing factor for me, that a lot of the teams just haven't turned up. I think the final has a big responsibility because the tournament has to go out with a bang. If we get a similar Boar Fest final, similar to the final in 2007, it's going to be a sad day for rugby and a sad way of ending what should be the showpiece event of rugby and should attract new fans to the game.
Yeah, we hope it's not a sad day. Pedro, final word to yourself, the new member of the team here. Do you think it's going to be a sad day for rugby? Have you been impressed with the quality so far?
I don't know about the quality, but I personally have really enjoyed this World Cup. Like, it's been, like, the gap has narrowed so much between, you know, our traditional top eight teams and the likes of the Pacific Islanders. Like, we even saw Tonga actually, you know, beating France. Samoa could have done more. And even the likes of, like, small guys, like, you know, Canada gave France a very hard game. Georgia are more than capable of putting in 50 minutes. From a perspective of a global game, I think we have a lot higher standard across the board. Okay, the top games now, the quality didn't materialize as we hoped, But like, look, going forward, I think we could have a much more competitive tournament in the future. Whereas like, you know, last time around when, you know, the likes of Portugal and Namibia were getting beaten by 100 points every single game, they were talking about paring it down, you know, making the group smaller. Now they can actually seriously think about, you know, making it bigger. So from a personal viewing point of view, I've been delighted with it. The quality has been there. I don't think the final is going to be a cracker. Do I care if it's not? Not really.
Yeah, well, Pedro, it's fair to say, you know, you've put in some great words on the show tonight and some lovely ways. I think I've heard the word shagged about 10 times. You're off, Pedro, in the next 2 weeks. You're going to the Leinster-Munster game, and there's something, you've invited members of an internet forum to meet up with you there. Is that not a bit risque?
It is a bit, yeah. I suppose it builds into what we're doing here online. Like, that's the great thing about being online. Anyone can be anyone, and you can pretty much say whatever you want, like, when it comes down to it, you know. I've selected maybe one or two potential axe murderers that I might bump into, like, and I'm sure they're saying the same things about me. But look, it'd be great to put faces on people, and, you know, at this stage, I think we're old enough and bold enough to know when to run and when to stay.
Yeah, have you ever gone on a blind date like that before, Alan?
No, it's an interesting one. I tell you, we must get an old battle royal on the show for the Munster-Leinster match. You know, get all the crazies that have been banned on boards, banned off boards, you know, give them their chance to shine again. And, you know, I suppose as long as we don't get sued for libel against, you know, O'Gara or Sexton, I think we should go for that.
Yeah, well, we want to be careful there. You know, those lads are they're very internet savvy. Peter, have you ever gone met up with somebody from the internet before? I know. Obviously, a lot of bankers that you don't know have knocked on your door, but have you ever met up with somebody who've you arranged to on a forum?
Is this for me? Sorry.
Yeah, it is. Look at that, avoiding the question.
Oh, no.
Can
no,
you
no.
believe this guy?
No, you just no. I've never met up with anyone. I've met on a forum. I wouldn't be as brave as the likes of Pedro and Alan. God knows what you could meet.
Well, Pedro, we hope you know your slick Spanish alertness will be with you, and you'll be back with us after those games in one piece. Lads, Peter, Alan, and Pedro, listen. Thanks a million for joining us on episode 10 of Talking Rugby with Dave O'Grady. Can't wait to talk to you next week. It's going to be exciting. Thanks, lads.
Cheers, Dave.
Cheers, thanks a lot.
You're listening to The World's Talking with Dave O'Grady. Don't forget, if you have a story, an internet forum, a discussion you want to have, email theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Don't forget to click like on Facebook, like on Twitter, like on everything, and we'll chat to you then.